Hello, I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, and welcome to EWTN Live. We're bringing you guests from around the world. Our guest tonight is here to talk to us and share a couple things that stand in the way of ruling elites and far-left radicals having total control of the society in which we live. These are the two most powerful forces in civil society, and they see them as obstacles, namely family and religion. After the regimes of Hitler, Stalin, Mao Zedong, Pol Pot brought death to merely 305 million people in the 20th century. Without giving them the results they wanted, the ruling class of today and their radical partners seem to be preferring a gentler approach in the 21st century than those dictators used. So we'll talk about the modern efforts of elites and activists to undermine traditional norms and values with our guest, who is the president of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights. He's also the author of a new book called Christianity in the Crosshairs, Ruling Class and Radicals Find a Common Enemy. Joining us from the Big Apple, his office in New York City, please welcome Bill Donahue. Bill, it is so good to have you back.
Well, thank you. I love you, buddy. You're the great. You're my favorite Chicagoan, that's for sure.
You only know two, but that's okay. So anyway, you wrote this book, and one of the things that you seem, in a way, surprised at, it's an unexpected alliance between the very, very wealthy elite people and the very, very far left-leaning radicals. Is that how you're perceiving the situation today?
Yes, I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, historically, you've always had elites, and then you've had the people at the bottom. We had slavery, the masters and the slave. You had the serfs at the bottom, and the lords and the manors and feudalism. Mm-hmm. Then in the rise of industrial capitalism, you had the capitalist class and you had the working class. Mm-hmm. And people like Karl Marx in the 19th century talked about the need for a working class revolution, the urban factory worker. Mm-hmm. They were opposed to the people who owned the property and the industry. Now, what's happened in the 20th century, you didn't see too many of those changes, but you've seen it in the 21st century in particular. Over the last couple of decades, and particularly more recently, we've seen that a conflation. We've seen, for example, a lot of the people in the ruling class, and by that I mean those men and women who run our institution, the institutions of government, in the corporate world, in the arts, in business, in the medical profession, in education, in the media, the major decision makers. They today have now are accepting a lot of the views of the radical class and the radical intellectuals. Not all of them, and clearly that's not true of Donald Trump, so there are important distinctions here to be made. Mm-hmm. And I'm somewhat optimistic about our side of being on the offensive these days, but quite frankly, yes, we've seen a situation where the ruling class and the people at the bottom, they are now working together, the radical intellectuals. The idea that it's not just George Soros, for example, who runs a lot of the foundations and gives the money to left-wing causes. There's a guy by the name of Neville Roy Singham. I'm sure most people never heard of him. I never heard about him until about a year or so ago. Neville Roy Singham. He lives with the Communist Chinese in Shanghai. He's made hundreds of millions in this country off of his software development, and he gives the money all to left-wing causes designed to hate America and to destroy America. He's working with the Communist Chinese. His wife is Jody Evans, and she is working with some radical Jews who hate Israel to destroy Israel and to work against Jews in New York City. So, yeah, here you see, it's incredible. The idea that the ruling class would take their ideas from the radical activists and intellectuals is something which is rather remarkable.
Mm-hmm. This, you know, there was a saying by Vladimir Lenin that a capitalist will sell you the rope you use to hang him with if he thinks he can make a profit. And the idea was that he could see himself having a cooperation with the super elite, the very wealthy, that he planned to hang. He planned to kill them. But he was willing to work with them in order to accomplish his purposes. And it would seem, from his view, he was manipulating the elites of his day in order to give the radicals of communism power. Is that the game that's being played here? Are the elite and wealthy, you know, just trying to win the favor of the radicals? And the radicals are using them with plans to get rid of them eventually?
Yeah, it's not as though the radicals have to manipulate the ruling class. The ruling class are taking their cues from them. So it's a little bit different from what you talked about Lenin, which was which was an accurate description of what happened then. But here you have them coming together. Again, I want to make it clear, I don't mean all the decision makers in our society, but certainly far too many of them. Look, the ruling class today, the major decision makers, they all went through higher education. Now, I spent many years in higher education. I've taught every grade from the second grade to newly minted PhDs from around the world. There are a lot of good people who teach in the college universities. Unfortunately, particularly but not exclusively, in the humanities and the social sciences, too many of them are engaged in indoctrination. They're not interested in education. And this is filtered into the medical profession. Who would have thought, for example, 20 years ago, that Harvard Medical School would be teaching that a man can become a woman and a woman can become a man? We all know it's a lie. We know it's a lie through science. The Catholic Church has been long understood that it's a lie. You're either XX like a woman or XY like a man. The ACLU says that men can get pregnant. We know it's a lie. These are radical ideas that have been taken and are being ushered forth by people in the ruling class. So there is something different from the time Lenin was speaking. And what it's worse is that you guys are, these are on the same side, working together. How many of the foundations, the Rockefeller Brothers Foundation, the Hewlett-Packard Foundation, the Ford Foundation, so many of them, the Tides Foundation, they're all working to give money to left-wing causes that hate America. Where did Black Lives Matter get its money from? It got it from Apple. It got it from Silicon Valley. Now, again, there are some important changes taking place. And I give Trump a lot of credit for this, but it certainly goes way beyond him. The people at the bottom, the average Joe, we've been fighting back. And if we have to teach the elites about common sense, then we have to do more of it. Because we can't just look to these people anymore as if they're some kind of a god. They've sold out.
Yeah. You know, we see, and you describe in your book some of the ways in which the elites and the far left are moving. One of the classic examples is the organization in Switzerland that meets in Davos every year. You talk a lot about them. What's their agenda, and how does that affect us?
What motivates the ruling class in this country, and certainly at the World Economic Forum, which is what you're referring to, is power. It's control. As you mentioned in the beginning, you know, Hitler and Stalin and the others, they just wanted brute force to get everybody in line. It's not that way anymore. Saint John Paul II referred to it as soft totalitarianism. Tocqueville in the 19th century talked about democratic despotism. And before him, Montesquieu said the same thing. An advisor to Hillary Clinton back in 2016 said the goal is the compliant citizenry, a docile, passive group of people who will take their cues from the power elite. So that's really what they want. They want to get us in line. And they'll use almost any tactic in the book. They use thought control. They use behavioral control. They're not going to resort to violence. They just want us to basically take all their cues from them. Now, the World Economic Forum, one of their leading gurus, their intellectual aspirants, is a man by the name of Harari. He says in the future, we have to be careful. What are we going to do, the ruling class, that is, worldwide, globally, what are we going to do about all the, quote, useless people? Now, as a Catholic, we understand there's no such thing as a useless person. We're all children of God. We heck of have our differences. That's fine. But we're not, nobody's a useless person. We saw what happens in societies with euthanasia on a grand scale when you come to that conclusion. Harari doesn't say exactly what they're going to do with these, quote, useless people. But the idea that they're talking this kind of vocabulary and people are looking at AI and artificial intelligence as different ways to control us, it's scary. And by the way, I'm not engaged in conspiracy theories, all right? Most of the people who believe in conspiracy theories are nuts. What I'm talking about in the book is all detailed. I have lots of endnotes, footnotes. I've got the bibliography. I quote from the very sources. It's not something that's a secret. It's not been manipulated behind the scenes. It's right out in front if people just open their eyes and read about it. They're very bold because they think that they're right. They don't believe in human nature. They don't believe in God because they're smarter than God. They don't need that. And these people in the ruling class overwhelmingly are secularists, and they have the postgraduate degrees. And you would think that these people being so smart, maybe they would know better. No, no, they're in their own arrogance and their exalted sense. The sin of pride is what we talk about in the Catholic Church. They exalt themselves instead of God, and that's why they're wrong.
One of the ways in which, for instance, the idea of making removal of the useless people a policy is showing up recently in Canada when a woman who had a backache was asked by her physician if she would want him to help her commit suicide. Now, she had a backache. Nothing dangerous, but she was an older person, her back hurt, so maybe you just want to die. And that would, this is going to be an issue that will grow more and more because among the useless are the elderly. If you look at it in a utilitarian way, do we use more resources than we contribute? Something along a very materialistic point of view like Marx would use. And that would seem to be a something that the radicals and the elites would like. The useless, non-productive people are just seen materialistically, so you kill them because we don't need them. Something that China is setting itself up for in great danger, I think.
And that's because, and partly because they're materialists too. They don't believe in anything spiritual. They don't believe in God. Right. They don't believe in transcendence. They don't believe in divine providence. They don't believe in a beginning and a middle and an end. These people are taking young kids, often girls. They go through a tough patch. Maybe she's 17 years of age and she's feeling despair. She's not liked at school, going through a rough period. We need to help these young people. What are they doing? They're telling them maybe the best thing to do is to put you down. And this has been happening in Canada and in Western Europe. Yes. However, I have some good news for this audience today, just yesterday. And the source, by the way, is EWTN News. Congratulations, EWTN News. That's where I got this information. There are signs, not enough of them, but there are signs in Slovenia, in Finland, in England, in France, in Europe, even maybe a little bit in Canada, which is one of the worst, and the United States, that they're beginning to tap the brakes a bit. People are realizing the horror stories are coming out. This is not a slippery slope. It's a sheet of ice, people. And once they start in, they always start with some very, very hard case, which is always exaggerated anyway to get their way. And then they go after the 17-year-old girl. That's what they do. There's a game behind this. They're not going to come out like Hitler and say, well, you're handicapped and the like, and so therefore you can't contribute to society. They won't be that bold. They'll come out with an air of compassion, They'll always tell you how much we love you and we're concerned about you. It's just that you just don't fit in any longer. No, you know, the Catholic Church, I am so proud. I don't know of another world religion that has thought these questions through and doctor-assisted suicide and the like better than the Catholic Church. We have a rich tradition. We have some great professors, and many of them are priests, and they've thought this through, and we've got all kinds of documents that the bishops put out as well, and the Vatican just recently revised. So, again, we're going to have to fight this doctor-assisted suicide, euthanasia. It's incredible what they're going to do about all the, quote, useless people.
Well, the underlying issue is that as Catholics who believe in God creating us, that God is the one who gave the dignity each of us has as an inherent birthright. And dignity is not something that is given by the state, by the elites, or by the radicals. We believe and firmly hold that dignity is a gift from God directly to each person. And therefore, that dignity must be protected from the moment of conception to natural end of life. And this, and during the in-between that, we do what we can to help promote that dignity. That is not in the radical leftist ideas, and it is not in the ideas of the elites. They see themselves as getting to the highest part of the tree, and the other monkeys are down below them.
Well, you're absolutely right, which is why they target Christianity more than anybody else. And the idea that, that we don't get our rights and on our human dignity from government. They want everything to come from the government. That's why they want people to work for the government or put them on the dole so they can own them in one way or another. But we have inalienable rights. That's encoded into the Declaration. And those rights come from the Creator. That's why a lot of them are anti-American. They see, for example, that Christianity and the founding of this country all come together, that we are human beings who get our rights from God, not from the state. The state can't give us anything. They need to respect the rights that we have. So that's what's driving us. And we were coming up to the 250th anniversary of America's birthday, and there's a lot of hatred on the part of the left. And you're going to see a lot more of it, unfortunately, coming out as we get closer to it into June and July. And I live in New York City, which is run by a Marxist millionaire Muslim who is out to destroy our society, and they're very open about it. It's a very dangerous time, but, you know, again, I think a number of people are beginning to catch on. The biggest problem I have with Father Mitch, this certainly wouldn't include you, that's for sure, thank God, but too many people who are on our side, who are public leaders in one way or another, they know what's right and what's wrong, but they lack the courage. They lack the courage of their convictions to speak out publicly. Now, look, I understand it. I get it. You're going to get intimidated. You're going to be called every name in the book. God knows I can write a book just about what I've gone through in that regard. And certainly you've got the courage of your convictions. We know that. Anybody knows Father Mitch knows that he's not exactly a wallflower. But that's it. My frustration a lot of times is with the people who are on our side. And look, I know it's a little bit easier for me to say to it because I'm a cultural warrior. I get paid to do this because I love to do this. But I think too many people on our side are reluctant to hold up a stop sign and say, listen, to a family member, a friend, maybe even at work, you know, I didn't appreciate that kind of commentary about my country, about my president, about my religion. I respect you. You need to respect me. I'm not asking you to go to war to get fired or anything like that. But I think too many people are reluctant to speak out.
And I think, Bill, there is a mentality all of us can have to say, look, here is the value that we hold. It's not that I want to focus on what I don't want. That's always a risk, to know more about what you don't want to happen than to have a clear idea of what God is asking of us. And there are lots of simple ways to get this started. One of the enemies of this whole elitist and left-wing coalition that you mentioned is the family. There is not a single one of us who cannot stand up for the family, for men and women to marry each other for life, to learn how to live with a spouse and work through the difficulties, and how to commit yourself to raising your children. That doesn't have to become political, though it ends up being so, but all of us can work just on that simple starting step at a time when our families are, I wouldn't even say they're falling apart, they're not even getting started, as the majority of adults don't even get married, and the majority of children are born to unmarried parents. These would be beginning points that all of us can work on without getting into the political fray.
And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned children. I have a chapter in the book called To Whom Do Children Belong?
Yes.
Well, obviously, they belong to parents, but not according to the left, not according to the elites. Our previous president, the, quote, devout Catholic, Joe Biden, said the children belong to all of us. Now, what they didn't mean that in a kind of a sanitized way, just, you know, we should all watch out for somebody else. They really do believe that the government has first dibs on the kids. And that was promoted by many other people. In my book, I detail how the people on the left, they want to get rid of homeschooling. Why? Because it stands in the way of the government. They don't like parochial schools. They hate Catholic schools. They don't like charter schools because too much private control, too much parental control. The government wants to be in charge of your kids so that way they can give them the thoughts that they think they should think. And they're very open about this. By the way, in New York City, this September, Zohran Mamdani, our Marxist millionaire Muslim, he says that we're going to start funding all kinds of daycare centers from 8 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. You can drop your kid off at the age of 2, and the government will raise your children for you. And this is not something that might happen. It's going to happen. They've already passed the legislation on this. Why would they want to get a hold of a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old? Are they worried about the kid, his diet or something like that? They're certainly not worried about his spiritual development. They won't allow it to happen. This is the whole idea of trying to program. You can get the kids early, then you can own them. They don't like, and I'm talking about the left. It began with Marx and many before him. But today, you've got members of the ruling class, like the mayor of New York City, like the former president of the United States. They want to have an opportunity to control the kids. They get them to think the right way. And I give many examples of that in the book. So people need to wake up. These people don't wish us well.
Well, a very recent example of that just came from the state of Vermont, where I think a couple hundred schools were able to help a child in grammar school make a sexual transition, you know, to have hormonal treatments and move towards surgeries without informing the parents. This would be an example of somebody working for the state thinking that they know a child and have the best interest of a child in mind better than the parents do. And this is something where we need to say, no, we are families, and that our family is going to be where I begin showing my responsibility to care for the people that I help bring into the world.
I can give you an example that's even worse, and everything you said is true, but I can give you a worse example. I believe it was in the state of Washington. It's already happened. It's not like, it's not like some hyperbole or exaggeration. There's a Christian couple out there, and they adopted a kid, and the young girl is having some difficulties. She thought she wanted to transition to the opposite sex, and the parents said, no, we're not going to affirm that. And they literally took the kids away from the parents.
Yes.
This is legalized kidnapping. It's not something that might happen. It's already happened. And we have the wonderful sister, Dominican sisters, in Hawthorne, New York, in Westchester, not too far from where I'm at in New York City. And they're in the course. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear their case coming up in the fall about whether or not they have to go along with all this transmania of using the right pronoun and the like. So if some guy or girl wants to be called they, these good sisters are not going to affirm this kind of madness. They're saying no. And they're trying to punish them for this. So while we're making progress and things are moving the right way, they're not moving fast enough to satisfy me, and I'm sure not you and the viewers as well. We do have them a little bit on defense these days, and there are more and more people who are speaking up, including the people in England and in Finland, the Scandinavian countries in general, and less so in this country. But there are some good signs that this kind of transmania is going to end. There's even a senator who's an OB, a gynecologist, who's introducing legislation that would make it a child abuse to transition a minor, somebody under the age of 19. And let me tell you something here. I've been saying for years, and when I first said it, people said, maybe, Bill, you're getting a little bit exaggerated. Now I'm happy to say more and more people are saying it. When you take a minor, when you take a 12-year-old, a 15-year-old, who's going through a wrong patch, and you want to give them sex reassignment surgery, puberty blockers, chemical castration, genital mutilation, all in the name of liberation, this is child abuse. Don't call it something else. Call it for what it is. It is child abuse. And thank God for this senator now that he's calling it that itself. We have to understand these people are in it for ideological purposes, because they believe that there's no such thing as human nature. And they're also in it for money. There's big bucks to be had by these monsters who are doing this to the young kids.
Well, the other that can also be checked in on is Dr. Van Meter. Dr. Van Meter is a pediatric endocrinologist who he studies the endocrinology system, the hormonal system of children. And the research that has come from long-term studies, longitudinal studies in Europe, is that it's not only something that is harmful, but it cuts life expectancy by 50%. You know, you are dooming the average person who goes through that to less than about half of their normal life expectancy. That's not stated, but Dr. Quentin Van Meter has tried to make this information. You can check it out on the internet. This is also something that is deadly, and I don't think we can escape that. Many of the tactics used still involve death. With Hitler, Stalin, Mao Zedong, it was mass starvation, working millions to death, and execution. But now, again, with this softer totalitarianism, it's still death by asking you to take a procedure that is very dangerous long-term, like sex identity change, or to euthanasia. And of course, abortion has been a tool for some time. We have to keep in mind that this tool of death comes from the enemy of our soul, whom Christ said is a liar, the father of lies, and a murderer from the beginning, in John 8:44. This has to be remembered. We have to take a little break, Bill. We're going to come back. We'll ask our audience if they have any questions and then continue our discussion. But I want people to learn more about Bill's work at the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights at their website. Just go to CatholicLeague.org. CatholicLeague.org. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We are discussing a book called Christianity in the Crosshairs, Ruling Class and Radicals Find a Common Enemy. It's by our guest, Bill Donahue. And you can get it at EWTNRC.com, our religious catalog, EWTNRC.com. And it is item number 3395. You can also find some of Bill's other books, such as Cultural Meltdown, The Secular Roots of Our Moral Crisis. Also, War on Virtue, How the Ruling Class is Killing the American Dream. These are also available at EWTNRC.com. It's good, really fine reflections on where our culture is going and some of the issues that come up that we have to deal with and respond to. Bill, you ready for a question?
Sure, absolutely.
Giddy up. Let's start off. Sir, where are you from?
I'm from Ireland, and I just noticed in the college system, when kids go to college, they seem to immediately start to become radicalized, and some of them recover from it, but some of them carry this on through their life, and that seems to be where a lot of it starts. And then where you have colleges where the professors do not partake in this type of thing, they seem to be demoted and everything else, never get promotion, that their careers are cancelled if they don't take part in this radicalization.
Yeah. Do you want to respond to that, Bill?
Yes, as I've said, I spent 16 years as a college professor, 20 years on the board of directors of the National Association of Scholars, where we fought against this kind of thing. There is, unfortunately, in among many, again, not all, but too many professors who have, I would call it a totalitarian impulse. They're not willing to just simply come out there and espouse or to profess like a professor should. No, they're there to control. They want the power. They want to be able to indoctrinate. And when it comes down to, if I had to name it, if I had to break it down to one word, the word would be truth. We as Catholics believe in truth. Jesus was asked about what is truth. He was asked about that. That's what our religion is about, the pursuit of truth. And by the way, that's what the academy or higher education should be about, the pursuit of truth, not the pursuit of politics. Too many of the college professors believe in what's called postmodernism. Sounds like a big word. Don't get confused, people. All it means is that there's no such thing as truth. Now, there was a fellow, everybody knows of his name, in the 20th century, who said the same thing as the left-wing professors say today. He said there's no such thing as truth. His name is Adolf Hitler. And once you believe that there's no such thing as truth, yes, you can put Jews into ovens just like pizzas. You can say a man can become a woman and a woman can become a man. They once asked a postmodernist philosopher, most of these people are mad as far as I'm concerned, we need to build more asylums, and I don't mean that just in jest. Some of these people are certifiably crazy. They asked this one woman, Lori Calhoun, are giraffes taller than ants? And she paused and she said, no, that's an article of faith. See, so truth is always tied to religion. They're actually right about that. It's our religion, by the way, and we're the Cadillac, we're the Roman Catholic Church. So that's why they're angry at us. But if you believe there's no such thing as truth, then you can teach the kids anything you want. You'll never even feel the slightest bit guilty or have any remorse about lying to them about American society. I taught Black history. I know about other countries. I know how slavery existed in every single part of the world. No place on the globe was without it. And the first place in the history of the world to get rid of it was in England because of the Christian impulse that it had. So I'd love to debate this with anybody. Yet we have all this hatred coming up to the 250th anniversary. If this country was so lousy, why do the immigrants keep on coming? Why is it that when Germany was ruled and you had the communist system, why is it that the people from East Germany wanted to jump over the wall into West Germany? Why didn't everybody jump over the wall from West Germany to East Germany? Why is it that the people coming from the South are going into the United States of America? Why is it? Why are they not going to someplace else? Why are they not going further deep in there? It's just amazing. You know, as I say, the average person has more common sense. But too many of the professors, their ego's out of control, their anger at, you know what they are? Many of them, dysfunctional people. I've met with them. I've worked with them. I've lived with them. Not all of them, but too many of them. They're unhappy in their own lives, which have crashed. They bring their same kind of dysfunction into the classroom. They don't smile. They don't laugh. They're not fun people to be around. And you know what? It's not the cops and firemen's sons and daughters who are transitioning to the other sex. It's the ones in Silicon Valley and in Wall Street and amongst the higher education people and the college professors. The cops, the working class has too much common sense. So, yeah, and they don't have some designs about control. So I'm glad that the fellow from Ireland mentioned this. And unfortunately, Ireland's got a serious problem in this regard. And it's not just in the United States and Canada. Unfortunately, it's throughout Western Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing, too, I recently had as guest Dr. Anthony Rizzi, and he talked about a basic issue, that what's your body for? And the body is how you come to know anything in the world. That's how you experience everything, through your body. Now, only if you live in an imaginary place in your brain could you make it an article of faith that a giraffe might be taller than an ant. You have to live in your own mind and in a theoretical concept of what could be, rather than pay attention to what you see and feel. You can go and bend down to an ant, and you can reach up to a giraffe and know from your body the facts. And they would prefer to live in a theoretical world of their own mind, a little bit too much like Immanuel Kant, the philosopher. But we have another question from our studio audience. Sir, what is your question?
Hello, Father. So I noticed around 2015, there was a major breakdown, you know, it's just been getting worse, of just the ability to debate. And, you know, instead of just seeing a debate as like my opinion versus yours, it becomes this like you're a bad person. And I've actually lost friends, and of course, culminating in Charlie Kirk's murder. So especially for like the younger people, like, how do we fight this? Like, how do we get through to like some of the people I've talked to? It's like, you can't, there's just not even any real common starting ground.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Good, great point.
Well,
Bill, you want to respond?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I cut my teeth on a TV show. This young man is too young to understand it. But back in the 1980s, there was a show on CNN called Crossfire. And then later on Fox News, there was Hannity and Combs. These were debate shows, the right against the left. And what happened every night, practically every night, is that those on the left lost because they don't have any common sense. And people like myself, I lived on these shows, and it wasn't just myself who won the debates, but they shut them down. Jon Stewart and others said, no, we're losing on this every night. Now, what's happened today, cable TV's had something to do with it, but social media in particular. Everybody thinks they're an expert. Look, there's a difference between an uninformed opinion and an informed judgment based on years of study and expertise. But unfortunately today, and this goes across all kinds of lines, you get this kind of thing. And there's an awful lot of garbage that's on social media and on the internet. Just I'm on the internet more than social media, that's for sure. The range of veracity of the truth ranges from A to Z. There's some very good stuff. There's some stuff which is simply wrong, others which are half-baked. The same is true even with AI. All you can do is to just keep studying and questioning. When I give an assignment to my staff and I ask them to get back with me something, and somebody says something, I say, look, that sounds like it may conform to what we believe. Let's give it a second look. Let's give it a third look. There's too much stuff out there. People are showing up on talk shows, The View, uninformed opinions, challenging people who are experts every day as if they have the knowledge to do this. It's unfortunate. This is part of our society. It's an example of the strain of narcissism. that everybody is about me and me, and I'm right and everybody else is wrong. And I notice increasingly the other side doesn't even have any evidence. They don't care about evidence. They don't marshal facts. They just simply feel something. Be careful if your judgment comes down to feelings, because somebody else may have a feeling to extinguish you.
One of the other issues is what you mentioned earlier about not accepting that there is such a reality as objective truth. That if you do not believe that there is objective truth, then, as this young man was saying, there's no basis in between us upon which you can build an argument. You can't accept each other's facts. You can't accept each other's use of words, because everything is my truth and you have your truth, and there's no objective truth in between us upon which we can step and form a bridge to communicate. And that is, and you even see on some parts of the radical left that they can't stand Aristotle and Plato because they use logic, and logic gets put into a category of white male dominance. If logic is something we cannot use and truth does not exist, then you enter a world where might has to make you right. There's no other basis than might making you right. That's the world we've entered into. And I think that young man is correct. We've entered into that period where people seem to think there's no basis in truth.
Well, that's what you have. This is called the triumph of moral relativism. It turns out to be nihilism. So I could say to somebody, listen, I have a right to own left-handers as slaves. We should put this to an initiative. Everybody can vote. Everybody has one vote. Right-handers believe that left-handers should be their slaves, and left-handers can disagree. But they lose, so we had democracy, right? The majority wins, and now we should have slavery. And if you don't want to own a slave, that's your business. But nobody has a right to tell me I can't own a slave. That's what happens once you don't believe in truth. So we have something in this country called a Bill of Rights, which prohibits the minority from losing its rights to the majority. Thank God we do, and that's all based on Christian thought. But yes, this is what happens when logic collapses altogether, because it's based on feelings. That's a very slippery basis upon which to make judgments, because I might have the feeling that you're having too many children. That's what the left thinks, and maybe we should put some of them down. So, you know, they just took a vote in Switzerland just this week. They have 9+ million people. They took a vote that they should cap the population at 10 million. Once you get to 10 million people, what happens? What are they going to do in Switzerland? How are they going to resolve that problem? And that problem is because they say 27% of the people who live in Switzerland today are foreign-born. So instead of dealing with the migration problem of people who don't want to assimilate, now they want to use, what are they going to use, euthanasia? And if somebody objects, they'll simply say, well, that's your idea of truth. There's no such an idea of truth. There's truth and there's untruths. And we can disagree sometimes about, you know, what's the best way you can understand truth, and that there's heuristic thought in this regard. But once you go down the idea to say that truth is just like an opinion, all the evils in the world can now take place. And this is what too many people in the colleges and universities, I think, they haven't even thought it through. Because once I point it out to them and say, well, you know what, I guess that could create a few problems. Well, yeah, duh.
Something you just brought up something in talking about Switzerland that you deal with in your book, and that's the question of immigration. Folks say correctly, we are a continent of immigrants. Some immigrants came here at the end of the last ice age, 10,000-12,000 years ago. Others came in the last century, and some are still coming over. But you have a quote from a Dutch political commentator, Eva Vlerdingerbroek, and she spoke at the CPAC in Hungary, April 27th of 2024. And I'll give this quote, and I'd like you to respond, because you used it in your book. Do we really accept the new reality that our globalist leaders have in mind for us? If nothing changes, if we don't start to seriously fight for our continent, for our religion, for our people, our countries, then this time that we live in will go down in history as the time in which Western nations no longer had to get invaded by hostile armies in order to be conquered. This time will then go down in history as the period in which the invader was actively invited in by a corrupt elite. And not only did this corrupt elite invite the enemy in, they made the native population pay for it too. Do you want to comment further on this issue? Because it's not only in Europe, but it's something that we have here.
That's a very brave Dutch woman, and she's suffered mightily, by the way, with the intimidation and harassment that she has suffered for standing up for her convictions. You know, one of the great Americans, of course, was Henry Kissinger. And just before he died at the age of 100, we had to witness that horrible scene on October 7, 2023, when the Gaza, when the Hamas militants went in and they plundered and killed and raped 1,200 innocent Jewish men, women, and children, mostly women and children. And Henry Kissinger realized that they were dancing in the streets in Europe, radical Muslims, to be exact, okay? Not saying all Muslims, saying radical Muslims. He said before he died that he made a mistake. He regrets very much promoting the idea of multiculturalism and that anybody can fit in, and like, there's some people who don't want to fit in. We're not talking here about the Yamish who just want to go off on their own. That's different. We're talking about a subset within the Muslim population which doesn't want to fit in, who wants to impose their idea of Sharia law on the rest of us. And that's the problem. We're not talking here about the decent, average Muslim person. But we are talking about these people here have come in, and they're taking over in many parts of Europe. They want to have their own police force and their own courts, and they've succeeded that to some extent. They're not fitting in the way the Irish, the Italians, the Poles, and everybody else have in the past. And if you want to come over to this country, fine. Come here to assimilate and to blend into the melting pot. Don't come over here to dominate, because we're not going to put up with it.
There's another side of this, too, of points that you brought up earlier. In your book, you mention how a false history of the United States has been set out by Howard Zinn. And he's been debunked. The man does not tell the truth of history. He misquotes people, Columbus and many others, totally distorting what they said and did. Not that they were saints, but they definitely were not what he made them out to be. And that false history has led to a decline in Americans having faith that America is a good idea. It's not an ethnic nation, it's a nation of ideas. And the Democratic Republic and the principles of the Declaration of Independence and the structure of the Constitution have laid those ideas out, and you have people in the elites and certainly the far left who think that they're wrong, and they falsify history to get people not to accept our basic principles. They don't know much civics anymore, yet alone American history. And as a result, the idea that we can filter who comes to our country and who does not gets lost. And this becomes a serious problem.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because when I was a professor teaching sociology, one of the courses that I taught was called Social Problems. In the textbook was all about how horrible America was treating everybody. So the way I handle it in the class is this. I said, let's just take three groups. Let's take racial minorities, let's take women, let's take the poor. And let's go back to when the country was founded. Are we going the right way? Are these people treated better today? Do they have more rights today, or they're worse off today than they were before? We know what the answer is. And then I'd say, look, let's look around at Latin America and compare the United States today to Latin America. And then we'll compare it to Africa. And then we'll compare it to the Middle East. And then we'll compare it to Asia. And then we'll compare it to Russia and the Europeans and the like. Let's see how they're treating their racial minorities, their Indians, their black and brown people. Let's see how they're treating their tribes. What about the poor? How are they treating the poor in those countries, like in North Korea and Iran and throughout many parts of Africa and Latin America? How are women being treated? Who are the ones who gave women their first rights? What part of the world was the first place to get rid of slavery? It was in Northern Europe. We know that the poor keep coming, wanting to have social mobility in this country. And what drives me mad is this. If you're really concerned about the poor, I work with the poor. I worked in Spanish Harlem for 4 years with black and Puerto Rican kids in a Catholic school in the 70s in a very crime-ridden neighborhood. I love those children. And the mothers didn't see too many fathers who were there with them and working with them. And they wanted the best education for their kids. And that's why they like the parochial schools. Why is it that the people who claim to be the champions of the poor, typically but not exclusively in the Democratic Party, why is it they're against school choice? Why do they want to keep them where they're at? Why won't they let them have charter schools? Why won't they let them have school choice vouchers to go to Catholic schools? Why do they want to consign them to the worst possible public schools? The people who are the enemy of the poor today are the ones who say, I champion their rights. They're lying about it. They're keeping these people in their place. Blacks and Hispanics want school choice. They want the opportunities that the affluent, rich white people have when they send their kids and they're living in their gated communities with their security guards and everything else. It's a shame what's happened. So I really take umbrage at the whole idea. The Catholic Church has done more to uplift the poor. And I always say about the United States, you don't like things here? Compared to what? Compared to what? Compared to the Africans, to the Middle Easterns, to the people of Latin America, to the Chinese, to the Japanese? In the 19th century, only in the late 19th century, did they even come up with the word freedom in China and Japan. They didn't even have a word for it. They didn't understand what freedom was. Slavery and serf-like conditions was the norm. So we don't need to be lectured to by left-wing ignorant professors. The reason they keep coming to this country is because this is the best place. This is the land of opportunity. And I'm particularly concerned about this. So here at the Catholic League, we're putting out reports about this, comparing the United States to other countries, pretty much what I did as a college professor. People need to be patriotic. I'm proud that I'm a Catholic. I'm also proud to be a veteran of the United States Air Force.
Well, I hope you're also happy and proud with the work and research that you're doing to provide people with that data to help them see some of these things you're talking about. Again, I want to mention your book, Christianity in the Crosshairs, Ruling Class and Radicals Find a Common Enemy. It's by our guest, Bill Donahue. It is available at ewtnrc.com, and it is item number 3395. Get Bill's other books, The Cultural Meltdown, The Secular Roots of Our Moral Crisis, and The War on Virtue, How the Ruling Class is Killing the American Dream. Also available at ewtnrc.com. Bill, keep on writing. I know you and I are getting, a little long in the tooth. however.
Yeah, but you got the hair. I don't have any.
Yeah, but still, it's what's inside there more than the outside. And, just keep letting our Lord squeeze the two of us until the pulp is gone out of the orange. Thank you for being with us, buddy. And I want to bless you and our audience. May Almighty God bless you all and keep you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. And we can bring Bill and his efforts, as well as all of our other programs and the many guests and specials we have, only because this network is brought to you by you. So please remember to keep us in between your gas bill, your electric bill, and your cable bill. If you do that, we'll pay all of our bills too. God bless you all, and thank you. And thank you, Bill Donahue.